later on. Right now, wind west at 8, lots of sunshine, 51 degrees Kenosha, 50 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Before we get to today's morning show, we want to remind you that the morning show is archived on our website, WGTD.org. Right there on the front page, look to the right side of the screen. You will find morning show programs archived back a decade and more. So if you are interested in searching, please enjoy the journey of looking for past morning shows on a plethora of fascinating topics. And we remind you that the morning show is also available now in podcast format as well, which actually allows you to hear a different morning show 7 days a week. It's available through all of the major podcast provider platforms, including Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast. Make sure that you look for the morning show with Greg Berg. Here's today's show. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am so pleased to be sitting opposite Dr. Deborah Ford, the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, who's been on the morning show any number of times. I'm pretty sure, however, this is the first time in quite a while that she has actually been in our studios. So, of course, for much of the COVID pandemic, all of our interviews were done either over the phone or via Zoom, and only very guardedly and cautiously did we begin inviting people back into the studios of WGTD as the situation became a bit safer. So it's great to be sitting opposite Chancellor Ford in order to talk about a wide array of different things, including a recent appearance she made before the U.S. House of Representatives Select Committee on the Economy. We're going to be talking about a prestigious award she was recently given and some other awards given to the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. We'll also be talking about a very, very special anniversary, namely the 10th anniversary of the RITA, which is going to be commemorated in a public open house that's coming up this Sunday. That and much, much more, including a little thing called commencement, need to be on our docket. So without further ado, Chancellor Deborah Ford, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Well, Greg, it is a delight to be back with you in person. It's always nice to be at WGTD and, of course, here at Gateway Technical College. So thank you for the invitation. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about things that are happening at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, and could not be more proud of our learning community as we really end this 2021-2022 academic year. Another high note for UW-Parkside and certainly our community.
For sure. And there is so much for you to be proud of and pleased about. And we'll get to all kinds of things in very quick order. I do want to make sure that we talk about this big event coming up this Sunday, April 24th, namely this open house for the RITA Talent Pickin Regional Center for Arts and Humanities. And it sounds like a lovely event. And, of course, it's folded into what's been all spring, a series of events designed to encourage the community to come to the RITA and experience all kinds of different things. It's, I'm sure, been exciting to see all that's unfolded there.
Well, thank you for giving us time to talk about the Rita Talent Pickin Regional Center for Arts and Humanities 10-year celebration. First, it is hard to believe that it was 10 years ago when we celebrated the opening of the Rita in January of 2012. Hmm. And this spring, we have commemorated the Rita opening and really celebrated in this sort of COVID context. But we are having an open house on Sunday, April 24th. The community is certainly invited. It starts at 1 o'clock with a number of open labs and engagement experiences with our faculty and our students. So folks who have not been out to UW Parkside for a while, we welcome you back to be a part of the Rita 10-year anniversary celebration. We will also have demonstrations from our theater department. Communication students will be doing videos along with students from English and other academic programs. We also will have the Parkside Range. We'll do their spring concert at 3 p.m. There are tickets available for that. And then reception for Together Again. And this is an art exhibit from artists from Racine and Kenosha, because one of the things we know about UW Parkside and about the Rita, it is a place for us to come together. So together again as we celebrate art and culture. So we welcome everyone to the 10th anniversary. And Greg, we were talking about your role when we opened the Rita 10 years ago and served as our Master of Ceremonies. And Rita, who her namesake is on the building, Rita Talent Pickin, her vision when she worked at UW Parkside many, many years ago when we were first opened was to bring the community to the campus and to take the campus to the community. And that's what we celebrate, is it being a regional center for arts and humanities, and really a destination for amazing learning and community engagement.
Nicely put. And yes, I remember saying in the one moment that I deviated from the script when I wanted to offer my thanks for being asked to be the Master of Ceremonies, and I think I said words to the effect that, you know, it makes no sense because there's all kinds of people here at Parkside, from Parkside, who could be doing what I'm doing, and yet it made all the sense in the world because Parkside has this exceptionally vibrant connection with the outside community. And in fact, the outside community isn't outside at all when it comes to Parkside. And so in that way, in a strange way, it felt perfectly right. I felt so at home. And it's part of what Parkside has been about for as long as I've been in this community. And so anyway, the Rita is certainly a hallmark of that openness and engagement with the community. So again, we do want to remind people about this open house on Sunday, April 24th from 1 until 7. And all kinds of different things are going on all through the afternoon into the early evening. And again, just folded into a plethora of wonderful theatrical and artistic and musical events that have been happening all spring to celebrate this wonderful anniversary. Let's talk about something not quite so dazzling, but I think it was probably pretty exciting, namely this opportunity that you had to offer testimony to the U.S. House of Representatives Select Committee on the Economy. This was back on the 11th of April, and we wanted to delay your visit to the morning show until all of that had taken place. So first of all, tell us a little bit about how and why that happened.
Well, first of all, I was honored not only to give testimony with others, who I will talk about, but really to host the field hearing for the Select Committee on the Economy. So Congressman Stile and his staff reached out about UW Parkside hosting this hearing. He and fellow committee members are going across the state to really listen and to learn of things that are working, but also listen to constituents and what can they do as they prepare a report for the House of Representatives. So Jim Himes from Connecticut is the chair of the committee, and Both he and Congressman Steil, who the ranking member of the committee, were joined by Congresswoman Gwen Moore. And so they spent really the better part of April 11th at UW Parkside. They had a chance to meet with a group of student leaders, and that was great for our students to meet representatives from Congress, but also to meet with the staffers and learn about different career paths that maybe even some of them, you know, might be interested in. They hosted a luncheon with community leaders and community leaders from education, from business, from industry, and nonprofit about what is happening here in Southeast Wisconsin, particularly with a focus on Kenosha, and really insightful conversations about the resilience of our community. And I know that both Congresswoman Moore, who was born in Racine, and calls and really sees this as the epicenter of the universe right here in Southeast Wisconsin, and we certainly agree with that. But they learned a lot. And then, of course, the official hearing or the formal hearing took place and was broadcast. And I, along with Brian Albrecht and a student here from Gateway and a representative from SC Johnson and Big Step, we were able to provide testimony on, initiatives that work in our community. And so I think I could summarize it in a few words. It's about talent. It's about developing this next generation of talent. And education cannot do it alone. Business and industry cannot do it alone. Nonprofit and government can't do it alone. It's really about how we here in Southeast Wisconsin work together. And that's what we shared. So talent, it's about partnerships, and recognizing the multiple pathways through higher education that lead to promising careers. And I would say for students today, and certainly our alumni, to be able to engage as active, committed, and dedicated citizens. It takes all of us. And I think that's what we demonstrated at this hearing.
So at least it sounds like a lot of what you were talking about was the success story that's already present, that's already in place here in southeastern Wisconsin, maybe in a way that's quite exceptional, especially here in Kenosha in terms of the way in which these different entities work together. I suppose your remarks are also a call for that to happen even wider and more deeply and even in more exciting ways.
Yeah, and I think what can Congress learn from what we're doing here? But more importantly, what can they do to continue to support us so that we keep the momentum that we have? One of the things we recognize in our part of the state, our part of the country, is that we lag in terms of educational attainment and folks with credentials past high school. And we know in this knowledge economy, folks need to commit to lifelong learning. And they are learning maybe in those technical careers that they have or those professional careers that they have. And for me, it's the both and. And that's why John Swallow at Carthage, Brian Albrecht here at Gateway Technical College, Jeff Hill at Herzing, and I work so closely together. And we are competitors, but we also are strong collaborators because we want to make sure that the students that we serve, and those are the ones in high school coming to our institutions or maybe in a two-year program coming to our institutions or adults with some college and no degree, we want to make sure that they have those opportunities really to excel in the work environments that they have or the careers that they aspire to. And we're preparing students for a lifetime. That's what we do. You know that. You're an educator with me. That's what was exciting as we talked about the economy. Education and an educated citizenry is at the core and heart of that.
Very well put. And, of course, I know you would be the first to say that although you and President Albrecht and President Swallow have done so much to foster these connections that they're also not something that you invented, that it was that was something your predecessor, Jack Keating, cared deeply about, as did H. George Anderson over at Carthage and so on. I mean, you are carrying on what really is a proud legacy of collaboration that I don't think happens to this extent in other places.
I don't either. And for me, when you were talking about the RITA, I think, And I know community engagement is in the DNA of UW-Parkside, but I think partnerships are in the DNA of this part of Wisconsin and here in the Midwest, because we know we can do more together. And that is what I believe the students that we serve, the alumni that we graduate, the partners that we work with, they expect us to work together.
For those of you just joining us, my guest today on the morning show is Dr. Deborah Ford, who is the chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. She's been chancellor there since 2009, and we are covering all kinds of different issues and concerns and events and celebrations that are part of the Parkside story in this spring of 2022. I didn't mention that we were going to talk about this, but it probably would be good for us to just talk for a moment about how successfully Parkside was able to navigate through this challenging period of the COVID-19 pandemic with a lot of strict protocols and so on. And I should think now, as we kind of inch our way towards something that feels so much more like normalcy, that I'm sure you feel very, very grateful that Parkside weathered this challenging period as well as it did.
Yes, indeed. And Greg, I remember one of our first conversations during COVID and what are we doing? How are we doing it? Who's making the decisions? And I would say, again, I have to say thank you to our faculty, our staff, and our students for adhering to the protocols that we put in place. We have learned so much about each other. We have learned so much about COVID and what we can do, and we have learned to be adaptable and to pivot. And we call it the Parkside Pivot, because as we made decisions, and we made a lot of decisions, but at the core of our decision-making was the health and safety of our campus community and advancing our academic mission. And that's guided us as we really adapted through these past few years. What I am most proud of is that during the COVID years, we had the largest graduating classes in our history.
Wow.
And that demonstrates the resiliency of our students and the dedication of our faculty and staff to help students achieve their dreams. Now, our enrollment has slipped a little bit during COVID. We know that. Part of that is because we've graduated more students, and other students are just weary of some of the things that they had to go through. But we're seeing promising signs for this coming fall. But again, thank you to the remarkable faculty and staff at UW-Parkside. Thank you to our students to staying on their degree paths and for learning along this journey. It is about learning, and that's what makes me so proud.
Right, and the learning never stopped. And in some ways, some learning occurred that probably could not have occurred during kind of normal life. That's right. Something to be very, very pleased about and proud of. So when we were just talking about vibrant partnerships, and I know that you are excited about a new partnership that Parkside has forged with Amazon, and something that they have in place called the Career Choice Program. So tell us about this partnership and the great promise which it represents.
Yeah, so we are thrilled to join with Amazon as one of their education partners for the Amazon Career Choice. And Amazon is partnering with colleges and universities across the country. I believe we are the first UW campus to join in this partnership, and it fits. Amazon has a very large presence here in Kenosha. And one of the things that we committed to when they first arrived in Kenosha is, how can we help you to support your employees? I've actually been to the Amazon Fulfillment Center on a tour. Fascinating what is happening there.
Wow.
And attended with a class, an MBA class, that was learning about supply chain and logistics. And we talked about with he would have been the lead operator at the time. He has since moved to a different Amazon facility. But what can we do together to make sure that the employees at Amazon have really the career choices? And Amazon is committed to providing tuition support for books and in any major. This is an opportunity to help their employees really advance take advantage of the quality higher ed programs here and support them in that journey. So I really encourage the folks from Amazon who are listening, take a look at this new program. There's a lot of flexibility built in, and degree programs that can the face-to-face during the day could be earning credits in the evening, could be earning credits while taking courses online. But there's a lot of flexibility there, and really encourage folks to take a look at this. And I would also say we are seeing more and more employers provide tuition reimbursement for their workforce as a competitive advantage, because they know investing in their employees in terms of their lifelong learning makes a positive impact for their organization. So we at UW-Parkside will continue to partner and are ready to partner to provide these academic pathways.
And boy, it seems like the word flexible comes up more and more in the world of higher education. I mean, much more so than back when you and I first started in the educational field. That's one thing that's it's come to be more and more valuable and essential. It's not a luxury anymore. You just need to be flexible.
That's right. And I think one of the things we talked about in some of our conversations, certainly Dr. Albrecht and I did, in this time of COVID, right? So it's about 10 years of, or what would have taken 10 years previously in terms of innovation has accelerated in about two. And so we are able, and we know we can deliver our curriculum in different ways. And I don't think, and actually I know everything will not go online, and not every learner wants to learn in an online environment, but for those that do, it is available to them because the quality is there and the commitment of faculty to learn, to be more flexible. And the traditional 15-week semester sitting in a classroom, Greg, I think those days are gone in terms of that being traditional. I think we're going to see so much more variety.
Right. That's not going to be just the tried and true only way to do things. It'll be one of the ways to do it, but not the only way.
Right. Yeah. And one thing I know that you do as a musician and faculty member is it's about the experiences today. And experiential learning is at the core of what we do. And so I think that's one of the reasons why Amazon is investing in their employees. It's the experiences that they will learn in that classroom environment. They'll be able to bring that back to their organization as well.
I know that you are also excited about something that involves a collaboration with the Freshwater Collaborative of Wisconsin. My understanding is that they have given UW-Parkside a grant that is going to allow for either a new training program or an expanded training program to take place that centers around one of the most crucial issues really facing humankind right now. Tell us about this.
Well, first of all, the Freshwater Collaborative is an initiative for the entire University of Wisconsin system, and it is led by colleagues at UW-Milwaukee and their School of Freshwater Sciences, actually, I believe, the only School of Freshwater Sciences in the entire world.
Wow.
And think about our location here, and we are certainly surrounded by the Great Lakes, and how do we ensure that we have access to fresh water. So the folks at UW-Milwaukee, Chancellor Mone and his team, have reached out to bring together the faculty across all of the campuses in the UW who are involved in any type of research, scholarly activity, and where have teaching expertise in the freshwater. So for us, we have a number of faculty members. Jessica Orlovsky is leading that effort at UW-Parkside. Julie Kinzelman, another faculty member, along with others, John Skalbeck and others in geosciences, as well as in the biological sciences. And I know I didn't name them all, so I apologize to my colleagues today. But they have been fortunate enough to receive, there was a state funding provided. And then the grants, you could apply for grants from of various sizes, and the grants were then awarded to the different campuses. And we are very fortunate that faculty at UW-Parkside have received grants. Much of this will involve students in terms of water sampling, but also modifying our curriculum. And I know even some of the folks in communication have been awarded a grant. And how do we communicate around our needs related to fresh water? And I'm just excited to see the interdisciplinary nature of how our faculty work together at UW-Parkside, and for us to be part of this statewide, but more importantly, really worldwide collaborative. It has impact well beyond UW-Parkside and well beyond the UW system. And that's what we do as educators, right? Solve the world's most pressing issues, anticipate what they might be, and bring solutions. That's what our faculty are doing.
That's what it's all about. Speaking of the communication department, I understand that they received a very, very nice honor. In fact, the highest honor that the UW system can award. Tell us about that.
Wow. That's all I can say.
Okay.
And
No.
There's so much more here, right? So each year, the University of Wisconsin Board of Regents provides Teaching Excellence Awards. And normally they award two individuals from a very competitive pool of nominees from all of the campuses and one department. And I, along with our entire learning community, could not be more proud of the Communication Department at UW-Parkside. They received this honor at the April Board of Regents meeting, which was held in Stevens Point a few weeks ago. And with this award comes, I believe, a cash prize for the department to use then to reinvest into their department. Professor Adrian Veramontes, who is chair of the communication department, received the award on behalf of her colleagues in communication. And why were they recognized? They were recognized because they have prioritized experiential learning across their curriculum. And they have been not only recognized by the UW Board of Regents for teaching excellence, but have also been featured in a number of national conferences for high impact learning. And it is embedded in all aspects of their curriculum. The majority of the students in communication complete an internship or more or two during their experience or during their program, and huge high marks from the students about our communication faculty. So kudos to the Department of Communication. To be recognized by the UW Board of Regents for Teaching Excellence is where it is all about. And I join with the board, with UW System, and certainly with UW-Parkside in congratulating them for their leadership, their innovation, and their commitment to students.
Fantastic. For those of you just joining us, my guest on today's morning show is Dr. Deborah Ford, the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, our neighbors right up to the north. She's been Chancellor there since 2009. And we have been talking about an array of different exciting new developments and awards involving Parkside. And now we get to shine the spotlight very squarely on you. Back in mid-March, you were the recipient of a lovely alumni award from the Catholic Education Foundation. And I believe that this was an awards banquet that took place in your hometown of Louisville, Kentucky. So, I mean, we're going to be talking in a little bit about kind of your background there in terms of growing up in Louisville and the education you received there. But first, tell us about this alumni award for leadership and service that you were given.
Wow. Thank you so much. I was honored to receive one of six Salute to Catholic School Alumni Awards at the 32nd Annual Catholic Education Foundation celebration. And there were 1,400 folks in attendance for this award ceremony. And the Catholic Education Foundation honors graduates from the local Catholic high schools in Louisville, Kentucky. Very large Catholic community there. And I was nominated by my high school, Mercy Academy. And to receive this honor was, wow, it was a highlight of, you know, my professional and personal career. And the event that they hosted was the first in-person event since COVID. And so that was a big celebration. And happy to report that they raised a record $1.4 million to support Catholic education at the elementary and middle school level that evening. So big sponsors, a lot of excitement for education. And as a proud educator, was certainly honored and very humble to be recognized.
Great. Can you tell us more about this organization, the Catholic Education Foundation? It sounds like they raise funds in order to support Catholic education at various levels.
Yeah, that is their primary mission in Louisville, Kentucky. It is to provide opportunities for really the youth to be able to have access to Catholic education at the K-8 level. And a number of, you know, Catholic schools across the region. Louisville is more like Milwaukee in many, many ways in terms of the community. When I visit Milwaukee, it feels that way. There's a lot of similarities because it's, I believe Louisville is a Midwestern city with a lot of Southern charm. And that's the way I would describe it. And certainly that's home. The other part is they celebrate education. And that they honored the all of the teachers that evening in the Catholic schools because of their commitment and dedication to students during COVID. And again, it was a way to really lift up what educators do each and every day. And then I, along with the other honorees, talked about our teachers. And we talked about the sacrifices that our parents made for us to be able to have Catholic education, which was certainly important in my family.
So tell us about this place that you spent your high school years. It's called Mercy Academy, located, again, right there in your hometown of Louisville, Kentucky. Yeah. Tell us more about Mercy Academy and the kind of education you received there.
Well, certainly outstanding education. It's an all-girls Catholic high school. The actual building that I attended high school in is no longer a school. They have since moved their high school out closer to the suburbs. It was located in downtown Louisville at the time. And I would say that a transformative education for me, and it's built on really the founder of the Sisters of Mercy, and Catherine McCauley, and I quoted her in my acceptance speech. And one of the things that she is known to say, and I think I model this each and every day, is to do ordinary things extraordinarily well.
Oh, wow.
And so I try to live that motto. And I think being able to go to Mercy as a high school student, it was the opportunity for me to really find who I am as a woman, and certainly as a leader and as a woman of faith. And I think that's what grounded me. And I have to say, Greg, when I learned of this honor, that, and actually I learned of it in December of last year, and then we worked on, you know, getting ready for it, I said on sort of on one condition, that when I come in town for the award ceremony and all my family is there and all of our college friends are there, that I had a chance to go back to the high school. And so the award ceremony was on a Tuesday, and Monday afternoon I went to the high school and had a tour and talked to some of the faculty, met many students, and then had an opportunity to engage with the student leaders of their student council. And the notes that I have received from them for taking just a little bit of time to talk about my experience. And I'm old. I mean, it's been a long time since I was in high school. But never underestimate the power. And I don't mean, and I mean that in a very complimentary way. Never underestimate what it means when we as adults take time to engage in meaningful ways with the youth, the next generation of leaders. And that's what I learned that day. And so when I accepted that award, which I give awards, right? I don't receive awards. I love giving them. It meant so much because I was able to feel the mercy spirit in this next generation.
When you look back at your time at the Mercy Academy, are there particular teachers that stand out in your memory, and for what particular reason do they stand out as playing an especially important role in your own education?
Yeah, wow, great. I mean, so many teachers, right? Mary Reisert taught language arts and social studies. They called it LASS, and learned to appreciate Shakespeare. Jim Pratenik taught history and helped to understand really about history and reading comprehension and thinking beyond and how not to maybe repeat things in history. Professor Paul, I can't remember his first name, chemistry and physics, because I didn't think I could do it. And he stayed with us. Jane Conboy taught theology. Julie Hausman taught biology. Marty Knapper and don't repeat was something in the, I believe, social sciences. But they were so dedicated to us as students and got to know us as individuals. And, of course, the one I, Cheryl Soderberg, and I'll never forget her. She has since passed away. But she really coached us as seniors in what to expect in college. And helped us to understand what that transition was all about. So I could stay here all day and talk about the teachers of Mercy Academy and the sisters and the legacy that is there. And my hope is, as an educator, is that everyone will think about the influence of a teacher in their lives. Because these are the folks who shape the future for us. And thank you, thank you, thank you to teachers and people. Professors and faculty for doing what they do.
You graduated from Mercy Academy and then you made the decision to stay put in Louisville. You got your bachelor's degree from the University of Louisville. Do you remember debating that very much? I mean, were you tempted by the siren call of going away to some faraway school, or did it feel right for you to stay put in Louisville? And if so, why was that the right choice for you?
Yeah, great question. So as a first-generation college student, I certainly had the allure of going to the University of Kentucky. But it was about an hour, maybe a little more from home. And in the end, I decided that the University of Louisville was a better fit. And it was an amazing fit for me. Not only did I receive my degrees from there, both my undergraduate and my doctoral degree, but I was introduced to student life and campus life, and I think I found my path to stay in higher education. Great mentors, exciting opportunities, and I was able to live at home my first semester as a first-generation college student, but then was able to move on to campus. So even though it was close, I had that full campus experience. I also met my husband at the University of Louisville when I was an undergraduate, and we are, together today. So, and then our son, amazingly, who spent his high school years here in Kenosha, he wanted to earn his degrees from the University of Louisville, and he has 2 degrees from Louisville. I have 2 degrees from Louisville, and John has 2 degrees from Louisville. So we're a cardinal family.
I guess you are. Well, very, very good. I do know that you departed Louisville for your master's degree at Indiana University. Were you already kind of out in the working world at that point?
No, I went right from undergraduate to my master's degree in College Student Personnel Administration. Indiana has one of the top programs. Again, great mentors, encouraged me to apply, served as provided letters of support and recommendation letters. And I was fortunate enough to receive a fellowship to be able to go to the University to Indiana University, and then came back and worked at a small Catholic private institution, Spalding University, for 13 and a half years.
Wow.
In the student affairs, student life area, and earned my doctorate during that time as well.
Very good. Very good. So you still have family in Louisville?
Oh, yes. A lot of family in Louisville, and along with all of our college friends. So anytime we can get back, we do. And
I've only been to Louisville once, but I remember it being absolutely lovely. And I remember and it wasn't nearly as far away as I thought. It really isn't a bad drive at all. And one of these days, I'm really anxious to get back there.
A lot happening in Louisville, Kentucky. Encourage folks to visit. Don't just drive through when you're on Interstate 65, but really, stop in, see what Louisville has to offer. It has so much, of course, Churchill Downs, the home of the Kentucky Derby, but also the Louisville Slugger Museum, the Muhammad Ali Center. That's the home of Muhammad Ali. I had the great fortune to meet Muhammad Ali twice.
Wow.
Because he actually worked as a youth, and where he first trained to be a boxer was on the campus. It was a community building and there at Spalding University. So rich history. And again, right, it's about adventure and sprouting your wings. That's what we want people to do as educators.
Absolutely. And I had forgotten this, although you mentioned it, that that you are a first-generation college student. That is, neither of your own parents went to college, but you managed to do that. And that helps explain why when you are on this program and talking about Parkside and talking about its mission, that theme has come up more than once, that there are some special challenges but also really special satisfactions that are tied up in delivering exciting educational opportunities to first-generation college students.
Absolutely, and I think that's the role that UW-Parkside has played, to be of the community and for the community. And we, over 50%, we have the highest percentage of first-generation college students in the UW system.
Wow.
But that has actually dropped a bit, right?
Hmm.
Because ultimately, we want that to drop.
Yes.
And what we're seeing is now second and some third generation UW-Parkside families coming in, and couldn't be more proud of all of our students, but particularly those first generation college students who say, I can and I will, and UW-Parkside is the place for me.
Excellent. Well, I know that you are excited about commencement, which comes up very, very soon. First of all, remind us what commencement was during kind of the height or the depths, whatever you want to say, of the COVID-19 pandemic. How did Parkside choose to handle that really vexing question of how do we celebrate commencement when it's not safe for us to be physically together?
I would say that the Parkside pivot was in full play over the past several years with commencement. So in May of 20, we filmed and recorded a few podcasts and to celebrate commencement with the pomp and circumstances. But at the same time, we didn't have that sort of feel, right? We got better. And because of our team in the College of Arts and Humanities and digital media and production, Alvaro Garcia, one of your colleagues, he's our associate dean, we now can do live streaming in a much better way. And so we live streamed really sort of the formal part of the ceremony where I speak, our chancellor's awardee speaks. We brought in music as well, and the provost speaks. And the next time we had commencement, we were able to actually bring students to campus. And that was in, I guess that was May of 21. We brought students to campus, but we were spread out all over the campus, and students could come in with a couple of family members, receive their diploma covers from their dean, and cross the stage wherever the stages were set up across the campus and take photos, receive a gift from the Alumni Association. And then in December of 21, we actually held our first in-person commencement back in DeSimone Arena. And again, this May, May 14th, 2022, we will have another in-person commencement, two ceremonies, one at 9 a.m. and one at 2 p.m. To celebrate, again, a very close to record-setting class of graduates. It's right on par. We'll know, you know, in a few weeks what the final numbers will be. And Wes Saber from Haribo, who was scheduled to be our speaker in May of 20, has agreed to be our speaker in May of 2022. And interim president of the UW system, Mike Falbo, who is a UW Parkside alumnus and received an honorary degree at our December commencement, has agreed to participate in our afternoon ceremony as well. So it's going to be another celebration at UW-Parkside of student success and academic excellence.
There is a lot to celebrate. So when is commencement?
May 14th.
May 14th. So on May 15th, are you off to the Bahamas, or does the work go on for the chancellor of UW-Parkside?
Well, the work always continues, right? Actually, I'm headed to Indianapolis because I am on a national committee with the NCAA, helping Division II, our athletic division, adapt and create the new policies around the new NCAA constitution. So I'm co-chairing that committee, and we actually have meetings early that week. But we'll be taking some vacation this summer and visiting with family and friends. So you have to rest as well. Mm-hmm. As an administrator, our work is 12 months a year, 365.
So. I was going to say, I mean, that's probably one thing that a lot of people don't understand is that even when at a glance the campus becomes pretty quiet, it never goes dark, and particularly for administrators, your work is ongoing. And I suppose even now there's all kinds of work in terms of laying the groundwork for this next academic year.
Absolutely. And we also have summer programs. Right? Mm. We also have the UW Flex option, the Bachelor of Science in Business Administration in the Flex format, where you can enroll every month. Hmm. We will be welcoming the incoming class of 22. And so with new student orientation and welcoming new faculty and staff. So there's a lot that happens in the summer at UW Parkside. And I would encourage folks to, you know, as we come out of the pandemic, of course, and as spring emerges, please come and visit UW Parkside because there's no place more beautiful than our campus and Petrifying Springs Park this time of year.
Absolutely. It's a great place to be. As a matter of fact, as I was driving right past Parkside this morning on my way to the radio station, there were three beautiful deer right by the side of Wood Road, and I just remember thinking that I am just the luckiest guy in the world to be able to take this beautiful drive. And once in a while, of course, I veer off onto the campus of Parkside because there's always so many exciting things going on there. And, of course, we encourage people to seek out more information about Parkside on your wonderful website, which I think is easy to navigate and really well put together. And that's simply uwp.edu. And all kinds of exciting information is readily available there. Well, at the helm of all of these exciting developments at Parkside, the Chancellor, Dr. Deborah Ford. Chancellor Ford, it's been wonderful to speak with you once again, and we wish you and all of your colleagues only the very, very best as the exciting story of Parkside goes forward from here. And thanks for being part of the morning show today.
Well, Greg, thank you for the opportunity as always.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, I'm excited to speak with Kara Ernst-Schalk, who is the director of the Racine Theatre Guild's production of Akila and the Bee, which tells the story of a gifted young woman who is preparing for the National Spelling Bee, but doing so over the objections of her concerned mother. This was the production that was well into rehearsal back in the spring of 2020. When the ugly scourge of COVID entered the picture and forced the shutdown of those final rehearsals and the scheduled performances just as the cast was ready to present this wonderful play to the community. And so just over 2 years later, at last, Akilah and the Bee is back on the Racine Theatre Guild stage, and Cara will be talking about her talented cast, and she hopes to have actually one of the young actors with her for tomorrow's interview. Also tomorrow, Sylvain Nouvel talks about the latest of his highly acclaimed science fiction novels, which is called Until the Last of Me. Next week, we have some very interesting programs scheduled, including a conversation with Professor Art Sear talking about recent events and issues. 1 week from today is Holocaust Remembrance Day, and our plans are to present some excerpts from some of the most memorable interviews we have done with Holocaust survivors over the years. Also next week, an interview with Steve Binder, who was the producer for Elvis Presley's